Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. The Great Recession is behind us and business is booming. New businesses especially. Entrepreneurs are opening up shop every month, from mom-and-pop stores to high-growth tech firms. But not all aspiring business owners are able to create the companies they'd like to. African Americans are facing unique barriers that keep them from entrepreneurship and limit the company's success. Researchers at the Samuel Du Bois Cook Center on Social Equity at Duke University analyzed the data and found that for many people, you have to have money to make money. Keisha Bentley Edwards is Associate Director of Research there, and she joins me now for a peek into a forthcoming report that details the obstacles to black business creation and help us answer the million-dollar question, what might work to remove them? Keisha, welcome to the State of Things. Good to have you
here. It's good to be here. Hi, Frank.
Yes, hello and welcome. Tell us about the research itself, the data that the team were working with, and some of the questions you asked.
Absolutely. So we use data from the survey of business owners as well as the annual survey of entrepreneurs, which comes from the Census Bureau. And so it's pretty widespread. It reaches everyone. And one of the things that we do at the Samuel Du Bois Cook Center is that we like to break myths, especially around wealth and wealth building. How do you get money? And so oftentimes, particularly when we talk about financial literacy, if you want to be wealthy, you need to have your own business. You need to create wealth through business. And what this report is focusing on is how you need wealth as an input to your business in order to make that business create wealth. And so that's a key focus of this project, which is what are the ways that people fund their businesses, how they get into it, how they acquire it, longevity, all of those things that are part of a successful business, and where there actually are disparities. And that's a big issue that we're addressing.
Well, tell us about the disparities. What did the data show?
Well, what the data shows is when we look at businesses overall, there's a disparity. So we know nationwide, African Americans are about roughly 13% of the population, but they are only 4% of businesses where you have employees. And when it comes to the overall percentage of employee non-employer businesses, we're also underrepresented. And in North Carolina, where we represent 25% of the population, this disparity is even wider as far as representation. So that's one aspect that is there. The other piece is when you think about employer versus non-employer businesses, and I want to make that distinction. An employer business is when you have your own company and you have people who work for you. Right. And a non-employer is what we think about as a one-woman show, mm-hmm. as far as your business. So you are your only employee as the business owner. And that is also a place where you find a big discrepancy, where 94% of black-owned businesses are non-employer, where they are the only employee of that company. And that's in comparison to 79% of white-owned businesses.
So how does this compare over time? I think that's one of the things we want to look at, whether anything has changed over time.
Well, that's the thing, is that where you have this big significance is Black businesses are very sensitive to economic turmoil nationwide. And so if you're acquiring your business for a loan, well, we know that there are discrepancies in how Black businesses are qualifying for loans. And if they do qualify for loans, it's for a smaller amount. And the other thing that you have to consider is that if businesses are failing nationwide, who can recover? So if you already have a lot of capital and wealth to back up, the bank is going to invest in keeping you in business. Whereas if you're, you know, taking out a $50,000 loan and you have no other equity, you're going to fail. And so when the recession is over and businesses start to boom, you can't just pick up your business and start over because you no longer have the credit. And it's a matter of who gets blamed for your business failing. Is it the overall economy or is it the business owner?
Well, ironically, you know, if you start out with a lot of capital and you fail, I mean, we have to say that the commander in chief right now, president of the United States, has gone bankrupt four times. But because he starts out with a $14 million stake, this could be an object lesson because it's so well known that the businesses he owed money to, including banks, wouldn't let him fail. So not only was he recapitalized, he had to be recapitalized.
Exactly.
Whereas if you have a $50,000 or $100,000 business, you'll simply be punished. You won't get another loan.
Absolutely. Right? And that is a big issue. And that also comes into play in how you actually acquire your business. So whether or not you start it because you decide that you want to found your own business and you're starting from the ground up, whether you inherit it, is it a transfer or a gift, or did you acquire it from a purchase, like a takeover? Those are all issues in your longevity and the stability of your business, as well as the wealth that you have in the first place to get in there.
So what do the data show about that in terms of how businesses generally get started or how well capitalized they are in general and how that compares with Black business owners?
So Black business owners are, although most businesses are founded by the business owner, 16% Black businesses are 16% more likely to start from the ground up in comparison to white businesses. And if you were to compare, and these are for businesses that have employees.
When you say ground up, what do you mean? What's the
meaning that they have an idea and they start a business? They and oftentimes in the Black community, these are businesses that are service oriented, the food industry, caterers, personal services. So think about your hairstylist who has their own business. Those types of ground up where it's very focused on you as your primary commodity. Those are the issues that come into play as far as how you acquire and the stability and the wealth that's necessary. So if you were to think about having that wealth, white employer businesses are 57% more likely to have started because of inheritance. So they inherited the business from a family. So for Black business owners, when they are inheriting a business, it's usually a family farm. So it's a very different dynamic than, say, your corner store or something along those lines.
And in terms of longevity, let's talk a little bit about that. And just to remind everybody, we are talking about Black wealth building and the success or barriers to success for Black business owners today on The State of Things. My guest is Keisha Bentley Edwards, Associate Director of Research and Director of the Health Equity Working Group at the Samuel Du Bois Cook Center on Social Equity at Duke University. Talk about longevity and sort of the comparisons there, how long businesses stay in business.
Well, when you think about longevity in businesses, it's very important because of the implications on the stability of the business through the peaks and valleys of the economy. So if you can survive these great recessions, it's a sign that you have a solid business, as well as sales, profitability, whether or not you hire or fire people. So this is very important when it comes to not just, oh, great to say established 1957, but as far as the overall stability of the businesses. So typically, Black businesses that have employees are 7 years or younger compared to white businesses that have employees that are 16 years or older. And so businesses that are that have more longevity tend to make more money. But we also find disparities in that as well. So for a white business with employees, their employees are typically making around $31,000 when they're 2 years in existence. for a black company, that doesn't occur on average until they're over 10 years. Mm. And so there are some disparities in the and what is the return on this longevity.
We have seen now for decades now that the federal government and many state governments have had programs in place that require for contractors to for state and federal projects to have a minority-owned business or some level of minority-owned business as a percentage of the contract. Has that helped in any way?
Well, I think it helps. Some of the data is a bit inconsistent on how those numbers impact the population level disparity. So you will see an influence on the individuals that are in that program and their businesses. But when it comes to moving and pushing that needle on the broader impact of business disparities and business ownership disparities, it's not consistent. And a big part of it is that when it's government funded, it is at the whims of who's the leadership. And so that's a big issue. And then also how a business is defined as black owned or minority owned. In the data that we use, the census is 51% or more is either has the shares, 51% ownership or equity in the business. For some cities and states, it could be that if you just have one owner that is one of your primary owners, then that's sufficient. And so that's also going to make a difference.
There are a lot of historical reasons, obviously, that you've implied and can be explicit. We can think about redlining and loan lending processes that have really kept African-American families from building wealth that could have been used to capitalize businesses and other things. What can be done now? Is there a way to turn this around?
Well, absolutely. I mean, there are programs. So there are some corporate banks. We partnered on this report with J.P. Morgan. And they do have opportunity funds that are available for minorities and for small businesses, as well as the Carolina locally small business fund. And what's important about those is that they work with these business owners and they offer key aspects when it comes to mentorship, which is helpful for them, as well as technical support, which is often what people need when they're starting a business to get those to get their proposals together. And that's a key aspect to come from multiple points. So it's not just the loan and the money, but also the advisory board, the networking, the social networking so that your business can get out there. So there are programs that are helpful, but we just need them to go to scale. The way that we look at businesses trying to put them to scale, we need these programs to also go to scale.
Keisha Bentley Edwards is Associate Director of Research and the Director of the Health Equity Working Group at Duke University's Samuel Du Bois Cook Center on Social Equity. The findings in the center's report are going to be discussed as part of the Forum on Racial and Gender Disparities in Business Ownership on Friday, February 8th at Duke's Rubenstein Library in Durham, North Carolina. Thank you so much for being on the program.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Just ahead, a conversation about race and discipline in North Carolina schools. We'll talk about it on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay tuned.
Context of white supremacy. Gus T. Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Friday, February 8, 2019, so I have been told. Before we get to the broadcast business at hand, I have said for a long time, Seattle, best plantation in the U.S., so-called. And part of my rationale, they generally have winters that are very dark, not a lot of sunshine. That, you know, is not my favorite type of weather. However, they are mild in terms of temperature. You don't have very much snow here, and it doesn't get very cold. It's generally not lower than 40 degrees most of the time. It's not below freezing very often here. However, this week, in fact, this winter has been extraordinarily mild. No gloves needed. It's been well above freezing the entire winter. We're like last 30 days before spring, right? We're close to. This week, cold weather, like winter cold, set in. It snowed the early part of the week. It stayed so cold that not only did it snow, the snow stayed on the ground the full week, which is extraordinary for these parts. It snowed today, like all day long, which also is rare for these parts, and a substantial accumulation. In fact, there's a weather advisory. They're saying we may get 20 inches of snow in Seattle. And for a place where it does not snow often, wow. I've lived in Atlanta. I've lived in other places where it doesn't snow often. And you go to the grocery store and there's nothing. All of the supplies are gone. I've never seen anything quite like going to the grocery store yesterday and there are no avocados. Like an empty produce section I've never seen in going to the grocery store. That is Seattle with winter blizzard conditions. So we are hanging tough. Hopefully the power will not go out and it will just be, you know, snowy for the week. Anywho, Cal's Yoga Retreat. That is going to come up in workplace racism quite a few times, but the retreat is sold out. So thanks to all the folks who expressed interest. All of the slots are filled, and we are ready to roll for February 21 through the 24th. We will be broadcasting from the retreat in Druryville, Virginia, the Nat Turner Library with Mr. Khalifa. We'll be looking forward to it. More to say, but we are all sold out. On to this here broadcast, Workplace Racism. This is not a spectator broadcast. If we have folks who are listening, non-white people, anywhere in the known universe. Number one, if you have figured out a way to solve any of the problems that are talked about on this broadcast, you figured out a way, hey, this is what to do so that you can sparkle when it's interview time. You get that job, you get that promotion, you get that loan if you're trying to open a business, or this is what you need to say if you need to get that business license, whatever. You have figured out these are some things that will help you solve problems, will help you minimize some of the obstacles, deliberate problems that are put in place to hinder non-white people in the workplace. You figured out how to solve some of those problems. You should be the first person to dial in the number 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Certainly, if we have any folks, if you have problems that you're having in the workplace and you would like a counter-racist perspective, ways that you can perhaps go about solving that problem without creating new problems, always dial in 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Certainly, if you have figured out some things that work well to solve problems, that should be your counter-racist duty to call in and share. The report that we heard at the beginning, black female, Dr. Keisha Bentley Edwards, down at Duke University, the Blue Devils, as they are known, in North Carolina. I thought there was a lot of really important information that she shared about black businesses, as they are called, and many of the deliberate obstacles that these businesses face, and many black people, they are starting from the bottom. We got B in Toronto, as her cousin says. Many black businesses, they are starting from scratch with nothing, whereas you have many more white businesses in a system of white supremacy where this is being passed down, this is inherited. They have something that they are just extending or building on, expanding, as Mr. Fuller says about the four stages of white supremacy racism. And then talking about the types of businesses and how these businesses frequently are not employing other people. All of this is the system of racism, white supremacy. But I thought that was very sobering, because I often hear black people, I've said this for years, I hear to this day, black people speak as though that is the panacea, that's all we need to do is black people just quit their jobs, not going to work for these white folks anymore, and go out and start your own business, that will solve the problem. Not at all. It will just change how you experience racism, white supremacy. It might be advantageous to you, but certainly don't think that, hey, racism will be done. Won't have to deal with that anymore. I'll just go into business for myself. You will be in for a very, very disappointing surprise. That said, she does have a website with some interesting reports. She focuses a lot of her time and energy on business. It's drbentleyedwards.com. Dr. just D-R, bentleyedwards.com if you want to check out some of her research. But that was the black female that we just heard talking about black businesses. If you would like to participate in the program and you're not able to join live, you can email untiljustice@gmail.com, untiljustice@gmail.com, and I can read your commentary on the air. If you either have commentary that you'd like to share about what's been discussed on the broadcast, or if you have your own situation that you're dealing with on the job, we can read it, and then listeners can give their thoughts, opinions, counter-racist perspective. We had folks who wrote in. In fact, as I said, workplace racism connected in many ways to the yoga retreat. But some of the things that folks wrote in already, before I even get to the yoga retreat, the so-called government shutdown. It is allegedly now over. President Donald Trump still very dissatisfied about the funding for the border wall that was supposed to come from Mexico, I thought. But he's still upset about that. And we've talked, I think, Andrew, in the UK, he inquired how this was impacting black people, the so-called shutdown. And there were a number of reports, some we heard on this broadcast, talking about the disproportionate impact that this shutdown had on black employees, contract workers, and that sort of thing. Folks who there wasn't necessarily a guarantee that they would get back pay, compensation for all of that time, I think over 30 days. With a suspension in working, we have non-white people directly impacted by this. One of them wrote in, been offering tremendous assistance with the yoga retreat preparation. And she said that there was a delay with her job because of the shutdown. Indirectly, you know, impact. But I mean, hey, it's having a direct impact. There was a delay on the job. And so now everything's back and rolling and they're like, hey, you know, we don't care delay or no, this is the deadline. And so you got to get it rolling. Like, oh, well, we got, you're 3 weeks behind. That means you know, better work three times as hard. John Henryism, but wrote in and saying that specifically was making things more difficult for them on the job and causing them to feel more stressed, feeling as though they're having to cram and do all of this extra work and being worked in an excessive, abusive manner as a result of the shutdown. As it relates to the yoga retreat, unfortunately, I don't even want to say it like that because there was planning about this, but the retreat is the 21st through the 24th. The 22nd is a Friday. It's all day on that Friday. And so for a lot of non-white people, that means you have to take that entire day off from the plantation. For some people, it might mean that Saturday as well. So victims of racism, and this is short notice too. People didn't have, you know, 6 months to plan and request time off and that sort of thing. So this challenging for a lot of people for many reasons. But folks wrote in and said, you know, I attempted to get time off to attend the retreat, and I thought I had all of the days cleared to be able to participate, no problem. And then lo and behold, the schedule comes out. Now, they did it verbally. It was, oh, sure, you're going to take off sometime February. Okay, no problem. And then when the written schedule comes out, that Thursday is not scheduled off. Friday, yes. Saturday, yes, no problem, the rest of it. But that Thursday, scheduled to work, which for this person meant that they had to miss day one and come late. And I explained, as we talked about, I think, on this broadcast, the importance of getting things in writing especially with time off, because I think we've heard this type of scenario many times on workplace racism, where there is a non-white person making a request for vacation or some sort of time off, and there will be verbal, "Oh, sure, no problem, Tina. Absolutely, Ricky, we got you. Take as much time as you need." Then when the schedule comes, I mean, this can be way in advance and everything, you did all the correct procedure, then the schedule comes out and they haven't honored that. And it'll be any excuse. "Oh, we had some things come up," or "I forgot," or, you know, whatever, you know, "the cat died," Mickey Mouse special on TV, anything to justify, "Oh yeah, we messed it up. We had said, I know I verbally said three, but we can only give you those 2 days off." It is, I think, a shrewd tactic. If you get a verbal confirmation on something like that, you can say immediately, "Well, this is really important and I have to purchase a plane ticket, so I'm going to follow up with you verbally to confirm that I do have these days off. So if there's any scheduling conflict, just to make sure, because the tickets will be non-refundable and this is, you know, something that's really important. So you said this is approved. I have that time off. Okay, I'm going to send you a follow-up email right now to confirm." And then guess what? You have electronic documentation. So the schedule comes out. Then you can say, whammo, "Well, the supervisor on February 1 at, you know, exactly 3:03 p.m. and 3 seconds emailed back affirmative that you had the exact dates." That sort of thing puts you in a much better position than verbally saying, because then they go, "Well, I don't remember. I think I said that I might, or it's possible. I don't remember giving you a definite," that sort of thing. Go ahead and get the exact documentation. We talk about that so many times. If you can email whatever you need to do, if it's a form or what have you, get all that set up way, way in advance. Many of the times racists do that sort of, in fact, any folks here had experience with that one, where you request time off in advance, what you did, the entire procedure, you didn't cut any corners, as they say, you did the procedure by the book, and they got the verbal confirmation that, "Oh yeah, you could take that time off." And then the schedule comes out, whammo, they renege, or they give you like half. You ask for maybe 2 days off and they give you one. You ask for 4 days off, they give you three, that sort of thing. Last thing I'll get in that was written in from a listener. Stacy in the UK with us. She was here for Black History Month in the UK, which is in October. And she told us that on her job, where they brought in Angie Thomas, author of the great, the new American classic, The Hate U Give, that it was suggested that perhaps we can do some form of twerking for Black History Month. And we had others who talked about Black History Month. It's going to be Soul Food Wednesday, I think it was described, Black History Month. We had a listener who wrote in about the retreat, trying to figure that out, see if we can work out the time and everything to make it happen. And she said, "Oh, and by the way, I thought that you all were just, you know, exaggerating, you know, just trying to lay it on thick a little bit, as they say, about the workplace and them having Black History Month, and it's going to be, you know, Chitlin Day on the plantation in celebration of Negro history." But she said, "I thought you all were just messing around." And then she said, "I went on my job and they said we're having Black History Month celebration." And she said, "What in the world?" Don't be surprised. What does Mr. Fuller say? Triple T, it doesn't get any better than tacky. Don't be surprised. That's the thing. I mean, regardless of what it is, don't be surprised if they have a bucket of chitlins waiting for you on your desk. Don't be surprised. I would pull out that phone, whoop, and then look around and see if they put chitlins on anybody else's desk. If not, you already know where to begin with question number one. Don't be surprised. Anything tacky, don't be surprised. And especially this time of year, whites are infamous. They have this sort of thing, that's workplace racism. They have this sort of thing at college campuses on a regular basis, where they deliberately plan their racist stunts, racist jokes for this time of year. On Dr. King's holiday, that's a really popular one. They'll have their, what they call like ghetto parties and that sort of thing. Deliberate acts of racism, don't be surprised. And if this sort of thing does happen on your job, please call in, let us know what happened and how you responded. If the folks that were talking about, they were having, I think, the Soul Food Wednesdays or whatever day it was. I think we talked about that before. You can let us know how it unfolds, how people have responded on the job to that one, if you care to update. Number again, 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Again, if we've had folks who have had the misfortune of getting the verbal confirmation for time off and then the renege when the written schedule is printed, definitely share. And then if folks have a code, as I said, solving problems without creating new problems for this is what to do for vacation. This is the best way to go about requesting vacation where you will get it. Some, I mean, they can deny, but you should be able to successfully get it. And then you'll have all the documentation that you need to make sure that you are secure. You can take that time off and be pretty certain that there will be no repercussions. You'll be good, be able to enjoy your time away from the job as safely as a victim can under the circumstances. Always good to get extra codification around that subject matter. Number again, 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. First few folks who dialed in with a hand up, if you have commentary to share, lines should be open. Proceed.
Hello, Gus.
Be in Toronto. Yes, ma'am.
Hi, thank you so much once again for helping me participate in your podcast. So, yes, I just wanted to say good evening to yourself, your callers and listeners as well. And I just wanted to add, based on your audio clip that you were just talking about with Dr. Bentley, Edward.com. I will definitely be checking it out because, yes, as I had mentioned in a prior podcast, I had initially started my own small business because I was tired of being passed over on the job on the plantation. However, I've not been able to sustain that business. I've often had to work under agencies to get subcontracts in order to feed my family. And I'm actually back working at another plantation in order to accrue more funds, again, to survive. unfortunately, the government contracts and contracts with other businesses, they're very rare to access. If the business is a white-owned business or a non-white, non-black-owned business, I find that they have easier time of accessing the capital funding, business grants, and bank loans with little to no restriction. In fact, when I used to work with the bank, I remember there was a black man who was an architect. And what he would do is he would use small lots within the city of Toronto to create eco-friendly housing. And he was looking for a slightly larger capital funding in order to really jumpstart his business. So I had referred him to the business department where they would have access to the resources. He was declined. However, there was an Asian man who was looking to open up a cafe where patrons can order a cup of coffee and play board games while they're drinking their coffee within the cafe. I referred him to the same department, and the Asian man was able to get the bank loan. So clearly the bank didn't really care about where they could get their higher returns. Racism took precedence. From what I would deduce from that. However, there's some more things I wanted to report. As for the Black History Month, at the current plantation where I'm at, the Black History Month is not even acknowledged. It's mainly white people that are there, and literally they don't acknowledge it. However, I did read that last year in one of the Toronto schools, Black History Month was celebrated by students wearing do-rags, and it was led by a female school staff. So that's how it was celebrated, at least last year, in one of the Toronto schools. In terms of vacation time, documentation is, you can't go wrong. It doesn't mean that you're going to get what you want, but you can't go wrong when you have documentation. It serves as a paper trail. For the other things to report real quickly, regarding online training, if you're on the plantation and Human Resources has designated a set of mandatory online training to meet compliance for your position, what I would recommend that you ask before even starting is whether or not you would be paid or compensated if you were to complete the online training remotely, meaning if you were to complete it, say, at home or at a convenient place for yourself. Because what I did was I literally just completed a series of online modules, thinking myself that I was being sufficient or and efficient to meeting compliance for this new job. So I had completed it first, most of it, and then sent an email requesting whether or not there will be compensation for this, only to find out that apparently there is no compensation for it because it's expected that I would have done the online training during work hours. Now, just to give you a quick indication as to what my position or what the position rather on the plantation looks like, because it's not mine. I just work there. I'm doing overnight awake shifts. So in between doing the tasks at hand and also answering assistant requests, I'm expected to somehow find the time to go into the office space where there's only one computer and an agency staff is incidentally sleeping in that same space during the overnight. So somehow I'm supposed to find a way to do the online training during those times of hours. Which is completely inefficient. So, again, a lesson learned, make sure that you find out upfront as to whether or not you would be paid to do the online training during your working hours or off time, off of your working hours. The second part to report is the Buy Felicia trend that's been happening among whites more and more that I've noticed here in Toronto, in particular in the workspaces. So for instance, I was in a training course for crisis intervention, and the trainer was showing a move as to how to release oneself from a two-hand hold. And the trainer decided to start naming the finishing release with the term of Buy Felicia. So in getting out of a two-hand hold grip, as you're turning your hand to release yourself from that grip, to help yourself remember, the trainer suggests using the term Buy Felicia, which I thought was very odd. The note, there were four non-white Black persons in the training, myself included. The rest were white. So it was just quite interesting that this term was used because I've never heard this term used in that way before. So I was awaiting a comparable term of Buy Becky with any of the remaining releases in the training. However, the trainer had not used those terms. And just to let you know, the trainer was a white female. So I really thought that this was tacky indeed, but kept my eye on getting that crisis intervention card in order to do what I need to do. The other part to report is an observation I was noticing, and it's in relation to the term called nigger work. And the first time I overheard this term was when I was 17 years old, and it was in a staff locker room between two white females who were changing into their work uniform. I guess they weren't aware that I was in the restroom, so I could still hear their voice while they were carrying on their conversation. And I've been noticing throughout the consistency through the history of my work that when whites just sporadically congregate together and you're just seeing non-white people continuing working while the whites congregate, they expect that non-verbally you're being assigned nigger work, meaning that somehow they've given themselves their own break while everybody else is doing their work for them, like on a plantation. So how to avoid this? I have some pointers as to what to do. A, you can choose to use the washroom often. B, you can join the spontaneous white congregation to see if there's a mini meeting to get further information to make sure you're not missing out on anything on the job. C, you can slow down your productivity, extending your task to your comfort. There's also D, which is one from Neely Fuller Jr.'s suggestion, which is asking for help. So those are some of the things that you can do. So definitely when you're starting to spot or even feel that something like this is happening, these are some of the suggestions that you can consider. Also, for stress management, I've purchased a manual treadmill. So the arrival time should be between tomorrow and Wednesday. So far, I've been emotionally eating and popping headache pain medication as a means of coping with some of the stress from white supremacy. And as a result, I had gained 60 pounds. So based on the fact that I love walking, however, the weather here in Toronto is pretty bad in terms of the winter, with it being very cold and lots of snow, I just decided to purchase that manual treadmill and looking forward to using all my stress on that treadmill and for a healthier future. And then lastly, there is the Bruce MacArthur story. I don't know if yourself or your callers or listeners are aware of this, but it's Toronto's own Jeffrey Dahmer version, in which he had killed 8 Middle Eastern gay men. He was gay himself, and he also engaged in cannibalism, so he also ate his victim. So he was sentenced today. He was charged on 8 counts of first-degree murder to run concurrently for life in prison. However, he's eligible for parole in 25 years, which is ridiculous. However, that happened to be a talk on the plantation, of which I had no comment, and I just kept it moving because, well, I can't speak to those things. That's something that's just, I'm just not familiar with. So these are the things that I just wanted to add. And thank you so much. I'll leave the line.
Wow. Thank you so much for sharing. Be in Toronto, global system of racism, white supremacy, not just located to one part of the world. Man, I was howling. I'm so glad I've been muted a lot for the 10 years. I was howling. Be in Toronto, okay, not the United States, and in Toronto, Canada, on the job, no less. This is the appropriate time to make references to Chris Tucker, film legend, Negro History Month, film legend, Chris Tucker. Bye, Felicia. Wow. And in a training where we're talking about something serious, we're talking about self-defense and how to get out of a hold if someone has you, if I heard it correctly, and it's bye, Felicia. And that's the mnemonic. We have codified the racist joke. This is how I want you to remember this hold. Bye, Felicia. From a white woman, racist man, racist woman, global system of race. And that, in my view, that is a racist joke. Anytime a white person says that, that is a conscious racist joke. That's the same thing Governor Northam in Virginia. That's another conversation. The better access to resources that you were talking about, understanding that the non-black, non-white people had, that is a trend they have. That was in the Seattle newspaper very recently, where they were talking about how bad black people got it here in the city of Seattle, that other non-white, non-black people get better access to loans at the bank, and they're treated closer to the way that white people are. Not quite, but closer, much closer than the Negroes are. The piece about verifying compensation, I think, is so important. That's the sort of thing that I say, check the manual. Is this in the manual? And then if it's not, that would be another one that I would want written down, because I've seen that happen a lot too, where they will verbally say, oh yeah, if you, you know, do that, we'll compensate you for your time. And then you come back and say, oh no, no, that was, I don't know if I said that. I think you, you know, must have misheard or mistaken, because we don't do that, you know, at all, ever. I don't even know where you heard of that from. The cows yoga retreat was not something that I wanted to do, but Satya X and others said that exercise diet is very important to promote with regards to racism, white supremacy, and black people. Workplace stress, we've talked about that for years. Dr. Wells, I just said John Henryism. Dr. Welsing talked about that and the toll that facing all of this terrorism and violence in the workplace, the long-term impact that this has on our health. I mean, that is, wow, all kinds of emergency with the weight gain and the stress that goes to that. And then you've got to take pills to manage it. Like, oh my God, that is a huge emergency. When it gets to that point, that is enormous emergency. I'm so glad to hear that you're making time for self-care with the exercise, but that is substantial. That is like, wow. There are some major, major problems. If this is, a lot of this is coming from the job, then this is not the job for me. Just why. And I think that's so many black people. That is exactly their experience, being stressed on the job and then eating bad foods to compensate, not being able to work out, or they do alcohol or whatever it is. They're not able to sleep, which can cause weight gain too. And it just ends up totally wreaking havoc on our health. Really be alert to that. If you're in a workplace situation that's that that is that toxic, might be time to find a better plantation. Much obliged to be in Toronto for sharing other folks who dialed in. If you have commentary on what's been shared, or if you have your own situation you would like to discuss, proceed.
Can I be heard?
Greetings, retired firefighter in Florida.
Greetings, Gus, and greetings, everyone. That was a great report by the caller from Canada. I was very much informed on the things that she was saying, and I also ordered a treadmill too. Had a non-white black male supervisor that retired just before I did, and he used to make note about how there are so many unracist white people in Canada. And I would say to myself, VGQ, as he's talking about it. So I really learned a lot from the caller from Canada when she gives her report. Okay, my report. I have two reports. Both of them are South Florida related. I'll start with the one on the Miami Dolphins. Now, also, I would have to say that I'm not going to talk about football. I don't talk about football a whole lot, anyway. except for, you know, if I'm involved with it directly. But it's not about football. Actually, I'm talking about workplace, staying on the course of workplace racism. It just so happens that it has something to do with the organization that is called Miami Dolphins. As I would think everybody would know, you know, those organizations, those teams are huge businesses. The owner has ownership of a stadium that actually can populate somewhere around 80,000 people, and all of the things that business that goes on in the stadium, more than just food, a lot of different things that goes on. But in this case, the Miami Dolphins just hired a new head football coach. He, prior to being the head football coach of the Miami Dolphins, he called the defensive plays for the present Super Bowl champions. You know how the press conference goes and whatnot, and but the report on the news that I saw, it was quite peculiar, but not surprising. They mentioned that he is from Honduras, and he is the first Hispanic to something like. I don't know if he was the first, and whatever that word means, but they did mention the word Hispanic. But all anybody has to do is just, you know, put it in the Google head football coach of the Miami Dolphins, and you will see that he is a black male, non-white black male. And I thought that was very slick, very slick of the not announcing the obvious, which is something that races are experts at doing for various reasons. And so that was just something I noticed. Another thing about, you know, when an owner is concerned with the sports program, they're going to try to hire someone that they think that's going to be successful, because that's going to be more money and more money for his business. But the problem, the racist white supremacy involved with professional sports, and when it comes to black people in positions like coaches and whatnot, is that they are not retained. Once they get fired from a job, they have a hard time finding another one as a head coach. That's where the problem really occurs in professional sports. Well, it doesn't have to be professional sport. It can be, you know, any athletic job. College or professional. That's where the problem is at. And then I found out, because I kept seeing this other black male around, you know, when the announcement came on television and some other reports also, when he was talking, and this black male that was right up there on the stage also. And I said, let me look this up, and who is this person? The Miami Dolphins, also the general manager, is a black male, also, meaning that person normally is in the position to, he is in charge of the football aspect of the business itself. And in turns, he also picks the players. The only thing the head coach does is coach the team. And, you know, from the standpoint of a head coach, and you know, he has assistants, but the general manager is that person's quote unquote boss. And of course, the boss of the Miami Dolphins is a white male. So just to give some outline on how things work up on that level. Last but not least, this is on somewhat of a lighter scale, Dade County Public Schools. I may have said this last week. I don't know for sure, Gus. But last week, they had the Teacher of the Year Awards. Did I mention that? Do you recall?
Teacher of the Year awards last week. I don't believe so.
Okay, Dade County Public Schools had their annual Teacher of the Year. There were four candidates for Teacher of the Year. And I was, you know, I was just looking at it on the news and the day before, and they interviewed all four of the candidates. Three of the four are non-white black people. Two non-white black females and one non-white black male. The fourth candidate was a white male Spaniard. Guess who won? And that's it in my report. Thank you. Typical of South Florida.
Set up for Andrew Gillum to win, and same thing. Man. Can't rely on the Negros to take home the prize in South Florida. We'll be set up for disappointment.
Oh, yeah. The main prize is that person gets a new car.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. No surprise there. The dark people all went home disappointed. But that is the system of white supremacy, indeed. Let's see. Much obliged, retired firefighter in Florida. Let's see. Other folks who dialed in, if you have a hand up again, if we have any folks, if we're, with regards to the time off where verbally they said, oh, yeah, no problem. We got you. Then when schedule comes out, it's, oops, no. Even after you had the verbal confirmation and or if you have figured out this is what to do to solve that problem. This is what to do every time you make that request for time off. You get it with no problem. If you have your own commentary to share, or if you have commentary specific to that, proceed.
Can I be heard?
Draptomania, yes, ma'am.
Hi, guests and guest. I was looking up some information in regards to workplace racism. Well, not workplace racism and specifically, but just workplace bullying. And I ran into a website that I found that might be a benefit to me and the callers and possibly, you know, you also, Gus. The name of the website is called workplacebullyinginstitute.org. It's www.workplacebullying.org. That's the name of the website. And they actually give you different resources in order to and strategies in order to deal with workplace bullying. And things that, you know, that you can do. I've been doing a lot of research. I'm finding a lot of things on YouTube and different strategies. And they were talking about, he was talking about how the name of the guy that runs this website, he has also has a YouTube channel also. His name is Dr. Gary Namey. And he was just, they were discussing how, you know, the United States has all these different legislatures regarding like bullying of children, how they're so, you know, against that. You know, that's now, you know, suppose I guess then is a crime. You know, all these different things, like, you know, all these different legislations. But when it comes down to when you're being bullied on a job and you're dealing with like maybe, you know, like, the different types of bullying that I've heard since I've been listening to workplace racism, none of that stuff is being covered throughout the legislation. So they're trying to come up with different legislation to help individuals that are being, because evidently this is it's more profound than I thought it was. It's like it's universal. I mean, it's been going on. I mean, we just had the young lady from Canada. She calls in. We have Stacey from London, you know, so this is like, you know, worldwide. Like you said, this is a worldwide thing. And it's just good to find different perspectives and different strategies and learning how to deal with these narcissistic tyrants that like to basically make people's lives miserable. And it's just kind of, you know, I'm just learning new things about, you know, the strategies that they use in order to bully you, how they get, like, you know, they have their different, like, they call them flying monkeys or, like, different, their minions, you know, at work or whatever, and they're all a German researcher that came up with the whole term. He was doing a research on workplace racism, and he came up with the term called mobbing. And that's when usually when the person that's maybe your boss or whoever on your job is that's bullying you. And they can bully you for all types of reasons. They may be afraid that you are you're doing better than them out of jealousy or, you know, different types of scenarios that they may find a reason to bully you. And what they would do is they get their different coworkers, they get people to basically through fear, based in fear, to either you're going to be down with them and bully you too, or you're going to be on the outside and then they can be targeted also. So they just show you different ways that these individuals go about terrorizing you in the workplace and strategies in order to deal with that. So I've been finding that to be very useful. But the researcher is the guy that came up with that whole terminology, mobbing, is from Germany. And like I said, just by listening to workplace racism and also listening to all these different other resources, it's been helping me, you know, just in my codification, because I'm able to see how these individuals think and how what kind of strategies they use, the different types of bullies and the different types of strategies that they use. And, you know, it's just pretty useful, I think. And I think that it would definitely help the other callers, the other victims on this line also, to maybe do a little bit more research in regards to that. So, again, the website is www.workplacebullying.org. And that's all I got.
Workplacebullying.org. Awesome. Thank you, Droptomania.
Mm-hmm.
Red in Nevada. Yes, ma'am.
No problem, guys.
Red in Nevada has been very helpful with organizing for the yoga retreat and details, Yeoman's work with assistance. We've had other folks who've been helpful as well. Lots of folks who've been working behind the scenes to hopefully have a successful experience in the great state of Virginia. Red in Nevada.
Thank you for taking my call, and definitely happy to help whenever I can. Just a few observations. The first one is actually about a relative. They didn't actually let me know about their the terrorism that they have been facing recently, but it finally kind of came out because of something that happened just this week. Apparently, within the first thing that happened that they didn't say anything about, it happened within maybe a week or so ago. There were some black sesame seeds placed on their desk to kind of simulate rat feces. That was the first thing. And then the second thing, and the reason why I feel like it's more racist terrorism, the second thing was that they found a note on their desk that said, you talk too much with your duck lips. And the person, they really weren't from, like, just the sound of their voice, because I spoke to them today, they didn't really, I could tell that it was affecting them. So that was the first thing, and trying to, you know, just definitely reconfirm that their worth and the beauty that, you know, we all, like, the people around them see. That was the first thing. Now at my plantation, speaking of awards, apparently I had been selected for some type of award, and I know I'd spoken in the past about how often this plantation, they hand out so many different, you know, poisonous, but really unhealthy things. It's always something. I think within this past couple of months, with every like food holiday, almost every food holiday, that gives them a reason to pass out some type of unhealthy food, whether it's cake one day, pie, candy, just everything that you can think of, basically, they're, you know, passing out, or for no reason at all, they'll order some other food. Again, not salad, not fruit, not anything, not even like even giving out anything that even healthy food information. It's always something unhealthy, but like when it comes to me, they automatically know that I don't want any parts of it. But with the award that I had got, it was because apparently I was doing, I guess, somewhat well, or well to them, to the white people in charge at the job. And they had I wasn't there to get the award. So my supervisor, the suspected racist white woman, she gave it to me, and she said, "All right," it was like in a bag, nothing fancy or anything. And she said, "Oh, I looked in it. It looks like it's nothing that you would really want, but, you know, here you go." So I thought that was funny. That was the first thing. But when I looked in the bag, it was like, basically, it seemed like maybe stuff that maybe like snacks that someone may have cleaned out their desk. That was a joke that I had said to another non-white person at the job who I speak to. And it was just, I thought that was just kind of funny. Like all the, if I was doing such a well, you know, such a good job, I would have much rather, you know, just put it on a piece of paper and let other white people know that. So maybe when it comes to when you need to start letting niggers go, you know, and I know this doesn't make a difference, but I just, you know, was thinking like, okay, I didn't need any of this crap. I don't eat any of it. But it was just basically a lot of things that I don't eat, like stuff with dairy and candy and just stuff that you would maybe give to a child at like a birthday party. So I kind of thought that was funny. And also when it comes to like the time off, I had a similar situation. It wasn't necessarily time off. It was actually leaving the plantation at a certain time. And the only thing that I would suggest, which has been spoken of numerous times on the program, is just making sure you have it in writing, even if you, because what I did was I first asked a supervisor if it was all right for me to leave early or leave at a different time. And they said yes, but then they also followed up and said, you know, send me an email. And so I definitely think that that's the best thing. But, you know, there's also some issues with my time not actually being updated correctly. So I guess that's all the observations I want to share this week. Thank you for allowing me to share.
She said sesame seeds, black sesame seeds left on the desk to look like rat feces. This is a workplace practical joke. Black sesame seeds left on the desk to look like rat feces. Ha ha. Doesn't get any better than who was even in my experience? They don't even have black sesame seeds like readily available at a lot of stores. I mean, hey, I'm in Seattle. They, you know, practically got black sesame seeds for free on every corner. But most places, they do not have black sesame seeds just any old where to go and like plan this out to, oh yeah, we'll make it seem like the Negroes got feces on their desk. Ha ha. I mean, Did you get the explanation of how that was resolved? Was that just, oh, that's a funny one, Ted. You got me. Looked like I had rat poo on my desk. Is that how that was resolved, or?
I didn't actually get to go too much in depth, and I just from like how it, the female, just from how she was feeling, I didn't want to like go go into it, but I am actually going to, like, maybe, you know, speak to her later on when she's maybe feeling a little bit better from, you know, from the last thing. It seemed like the last note was more affected her more than the rat feces part.
Mm. Got it. Yeah. That is constant. Black people, there is a reason, mention her name again, the grandcestor talked about black self-respect, feeling so many ways. That's why I referenced it as violence. When B talked about the amount of stress and terrorism that she was experiencing and how it was impacting her, I said, I think that's widespread. Dr. Welsing thought it was widespread. She said she felt like that was why a lot, she had concluded as a clinician that that was why a lot of black people were not seeking employment, because that had been their entire career, is experiencing that sort of terrorism on the job. Pam even talked about that in Black Love is a Revolutionary Act. She had a whole section about it, and it was the exact same thing. Black female being terrorized, Miranda, that was her job. That was the story we read in the book, being terrorized on the job. And I think she gained like 40 pounds as a result of the terrorism that she experienced in the workplace. I think it's widespread. It's tons of black people that go through that sort of thing. And then specifically with that incident, it's not just shut up, Negro, we don't want to hear from you. It's shut up with your duck lips. Got to make sure we get that in. It's consistent. Racists, something wrong with black people's nose, something wrong with your hair, something wrong with your lips, and, you know, just everything about you. And black self-respect, us thinking, yep, they're right. It is. I'll be quiet. I'll shut up. Yep. Incidentally, that's the sort of thing I would say if they're brazen enough, toxic enough in that work environment to lead that sort of, we talked about, but she just gave the website. I would save, photograph everything. That is beautiful setup right there. I would self-care, know that you're in an extremely dangerous environment, but absolutely save it, frame it, putting you in great position for your case. Lots of evidence that you are being terrorized in the workplace. Other folks who dialed in, if you have commentary to share, if we missed you totally thus, well, actually, we'll pause 1 second. We had other folks who wrote in, so the email again, untiljustice@gmail.com. Untiljustice@gmail.com. So if you are not able to participate during the live broadcast, but you have commentary or your own situation, something came up during the broadcast where you would like to share, just untiljustice@gmail.com, and we will get your commentary on the air. So, non-white person that wrote in for workplace racism, she says, one of the callers last week talked of being accused of being a disease carrier. It struck me after listening to his account that the racist suspect accuser was using his illness as a ruse to cover up her planned fake sickness excuse to take time off work. That said, unfortunately, I have had similar experiences. My breathing is affected by air pollution, many folks, which results in excessive coughing. In fact, frequently that is done deliberately as an act of racism. Melissa Harris Perry, before her program was taken off air, she had a whole section talking about how racism, white supremacy, whites would deliberately toxify the air where you have a high number of black people, non-white people. They're going to have more pollution. So that right there could be direct indication of white supremacy terrorism. Continuing. This is mainly during the summer when levels in the air are higher. I've suffered with this for years, but it doesn't happen every year. I've been to the doctor, so I'm very aware of the cause. Sometimes the situation is made worse by the air conditioning in the office, particularly in the meeting rooms. A couple of years ago, my manager would slyly ask me about my cough. I didn't pay much attention to this at first because I was so used to my condition. I wasn't confused enough to think this was her caring about me, but I didn't realize she was practicing racism. One summer, my cough was particularly bad, and my head of team kept asking about it, suggesting I should go to the doctor. I had explained several times over and in past summers what the cause was. I was more confused by her, so sadly, thought there was an element of care. After being repeatedly questioned, I realized that yes, this was racist practice and that I was being accused of being a disease carrier. She even went as far as leaving a half-used bottle of cough medicine on the desk I've been allocated. If I had raised concern about this mistreatment, which is what it was, not a sign of her caring about me, I would have been made to feel I was overly sensitive or ungrateful. She probably would have cried. By this point, I realized that my cough was a discussion point across the team. Paranoid and uncomfortable, I went back to the doctor. I even told this to my head of team because of being made to feel like a diseased being. In hindsight, I should have asked if there was an issue, as she keeps asking, and I told her that I feel uncomfortable. I know that would have shut her down. Last week, you recommended speaking to your parents about their workplace racism experiences. My parents are no longer alive, but I vividly remember my mother's giving daily accounts of the mistreatment she faced. She actually called it being terrorized. Accurate woman. She worked in a school as a cleaner, and her relationship with the racist suspect caretaker was fine until she made team leader. I don't think he reported to her, but her being in a managerial position was, of course, a problem. We also live near the school, so he was very aware of the size of our house, which my parents owned, also a cause of racist discomfort for him. In the end, it got so bad she left the job. Now that I am older, I remember my mother and father's experiences and their discussions. I recognize the patterns in the mistreatment I have faced. I also have a much better understanding of how my parents were affected emotionally and health-wise. Again, I make a point of discussing what I have experienced with my offspring, particularly in guiding my child on how to navigate acts of mistreatment. Recently, she described her experiences as acts of violence, even though none of this has actually been physical. For her, the effect is the same. Much obliged. Thank you for writing in, sir. Very important to talk to your offspring about racism and workplace racism specifically, because if we don't solve this problem, they will be dealing with workplace racism, and we do not want them to be confused, surprised about what is happening to them. But hopefully we'll solve this problem before then, and they won't have to deal with workplace racism. Number again, 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Other folks who dialed in, if you have commentary to share, line should be open. Proceed. While folks are waiting to get their act together, I will again, for the vacation aspect, because I feel like we have heard that one for a second. If folks have figured out anything that works well for vacations, please let us know. You can drop an email for that one specifically. Documentation, I think, also is great. That is certainly one that you want to get policy and procedure, which I would always encourage. What is the vacation policy? And maybe even ask before you get to your actual day, what's the best way to go about making sure that you get time off? Know it, things happen and you're not always going to be guaranteed to get time off if you request, but what's the best way to get the best likelihood of getting time off when you really, really need to be away from work? That might be a great question to ask your supervisor or a white person who is in charge and willing to give you truthful information. Ask and see, then you'll know. And then you can do exactly that, so you can put yourself in the best position anytime that you need time away from the job. Incidentally, also, while I have a second, I forgot at the beginning of the program, I would have said something or said quite a few things about Lieutenant Governor Fairfax in Virginia, black male cowbell, or it's not cowbell ring. Can't ring the cowbell. But certainly I could reference the man nod, Dr. Curry. And Lieutenant Governor Fairfax now facing multiple accusations of sexual misconduct. This time last week, they were talking about him being the second black male governor of Virginia. A week later, the white governor is still the governor, hanging out, hoping the storm passes, metaphor. Meanwhile, the black lieutenant governor, Fairfax, Mr. Fairfax, they're talking about, we want an investigation. We want to see, we want to get to the root of these allegations and see if there's any truth. I would not be surprised at all if by the time things conclude, Mr. Fairfax ends up, the black male, being the one that has to leave office in Virginia, while Mr. Northam, Coon Man, gets to serve out his full term as governor of the Commonwealth. Would not surprise me at all. But that did happen. I would have talked about that as workplace racism because he was accused, or these accusations of sexual misconduct came up in the way that they came, the timing of all of this, when he's looking like he might get a promotion of some sort, just seemed, they've had a number of news reports where he's also alleged suspicion or reported suspicion about this. I'll have more to say about this on the compensatory call-in, but I absolutely think that that could have been in workplace racism as well, what Lieutenant Governor Fairfax is experiencing in the great state of Virginia, and again, where a lot of whites are pretending as though they are concerned about the female accusers in this case, as opposed to just interested in practicing racism, white supremacy. I'll pause there. Again, 641-715-3640, the code 564-943, pound. Press star 61 if you have comments, questions. Let's see, folks that we missed who had commentary, folks that we missed who have workplace racism commentary.
Hi, Gus.
Stacy in the UK. We'll give our obligatory timestamp. Let's see, 2:23 a.m. London time.
Hi to you, Gus, and to the rest of the callers. It is 2:20 exactly. I just wanted to comment on the leave codification. I mean, I've mentioned that I've had problems in the past or recently, because I didn't really have a problem with this before, but where my manager had verbally agreed leave, I sent a request in through the online system, and I also always follow up with an email, but somehow my leave wasn't approved, so I made sure that I turned up for work, and a similar thing was done with a non-white female in another team, and I advised her to make sure that she turned up for work. Do not take that time off. I know you mentioned sending the emails and maybe putting in the correspondence that you're buying tickets or whatever. I would just probably refine that, because I just think anything that gives an indication that you might be spending money on going on holiday or doing something nice for yourself is racist antagonism. So I would say, or what I do is I usually say I've got an appointment and keep it as vague as that. Obviously, if it's a longer period of time, you're probably not going to one specific appointment, but I just usually use that codification. That way they have no idea what that means. And that doesn't guarantee the leave, but that, you know, you're not hopefully attracting even more racist attention. And again, referring to the non-white female who was moving teams into a new role, I mentioned that she had been terrorized. She's been in the job now for about a week and a half. It was made clear by her managers, her new managers, that she should not be doing any more work related to the old team that she worked in. However, the director who she used to report to is still insisting or attempting to get her to do work. She even mentioned it again in front of the new one of the new managers that this non-white female is supporting. This manager is also non-white. And this is the second time that the director has had to be pulled aside to tell her, no, this non-white female will not be supporting you. She's busy. I don't think that would have been happening if this non-white female was reporting to a white director. I just don't believe that would have been happening. And apparently she's no longer sending her emails requesting that she does work, but apparently she's moved to WhatsApp, as if that isn't still evidence, but there, somehow she believes that there's some logic to that. So she's persistent. And the fact is, the non-white female had informed them that she would be taking up this new role in December, was only required to give a month's notice. It's now February. There's absolutely no reason why they couldn't have got in a new member of staff, or at least a temp. And I think it is LeBron James that received all the backlash, because he took his own steps to change jobs when he was no longer happy in the team that he was in. And he received backlash because he, you know, was obviously overstepping his non-white station. And I like him, what she's been, how she's being treated to that situation. And the last thing I will say is that I haven't been, or I haven't experienced being called Felicia or being around anybody using the term by Felicia, but I have been greeted with shizzle and nizzle. So I meet my line there, Gus.
Shizzle, global system of racism, white supremacy. I think we talked about that last week, and the by Felicia is right there. All of that stereotypical Negro dialect that they reserve for the dark people on the job, those are acts of white supremacy racism. Doesn't get any better than tacky, but in my view, that's what it is when they come in and reserve all of that. Oh, here comes the Negros. What's up for shizzle, my nizzle? What's cracking for lunch today, my dog? I mean, all of that. All of that. It's one big racist joke that, you know, I was so confused I did not grasp it as even the way, hey, what's up, bro, brother, sister? I know a lot of them do that too, man. The leap time, much obliged. And again, that's also important as well. Just remembering we are in a system of racism, white supremacy. You can do everything correct and they can still, you know, veto it. That's what they enjoy. The discipline, knowing I'm going to submit if it's, you know, you have whatever plans they are. And I definitely love the being more vague, not giving them any detail, if at all, if possible, about what you're going to be doing, or are you taking a plane, a bus, a tricycle, whatever. Like, trying not to share any details at all. Exactly right. If they find out where did you get a tricycle from? We need to, you know, fire him immediately, or at least dock his pay. But yeah, they can, you know, decide to not give it to you, or they can't. Keeping that in mind, that's what the system of white supremacy means, but trying to do the best that we can. Go by the policy and procedure. Ask questions. Let's see. Folks, any other folks who dialed in, if you have comments, questions, your own situation, or if you have thoughts about what has been shared thus far, feel free, especially any folks that we missed totally. Open. If we have folks, spectating for Black History Month, we'll make sure you invest racism-notes.blogspot.com, racism-notes.blogspot.com, listener-supported counter-racist radio. PayPal button in the top right corner. Got a brand new PayPal account within the last week, connected with the yoga trip and all, but up, rolling, working perfectly. Invest if you think the program is constructive. Might look a little different if you are accustomed to the old module, old setup, but new account works fine, should be rolling. Let's see, I'll keep an eye on
the switchboard? And I guess also, have other folks had any issues with Black History Month coming up in the workplace? I guess I would have thought that unusual prior to hearing that it was coming up pretty regularly for folks, at least within the last few months or so on the broadcast. Has that been an issue for any of the folks? Or I guess I'll get in a twofer. Black History Month or the situation in Virginia with Governor Northam and the blackface and all of that. Have either of those come up as topics, issues in the workplace for any of the callers?
Can I be heard?
Greetings, caller in Florida.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, sir. Greetings to Gus, the host, listeners, and callers. Speaking of the, I'll begin my first one with the Black History Month. That did come up in the committee that was formed. It was me and a couple of Black people, mainly Black females, and it was about maybe three or four white women in there. And I think during the portion of when they were coming up with the lynching idea, the Black History was brought up, because I guess they were trying to see if they could get the lynching to be, I guess, sometime this month, but it was held last month. And the black male that was in there, the first one, he said, because I opened it up and I was getting straight to business. Really, I was honest. I didn't really want this to be about a lynching or any food, but I'm happy to acknowledge any other ideas. If you all wanted to contribute anything, I guess, be it a lynching or anything, but I just want to make sure people are being treated correctly. So this white woman was like, so do you mean you want to have a lunch or anything? Because I think this is going over our heads. And then another comment that was made by the black male after the black female that I speak with, she was involved too. So she was like, so would you like to have a forum take place where people can choose the term, air out their grievances or speak their mind on things? So the black male says, I can almost guarantee you that the office isn't going to engage in anything politically motivated. So I don't know what that meant. So I wasn't really speaking too much. So he was very nervous. Body language wise, he was gripping around his tie that he had on. But any other time, he's making fun of, black people, anti-blackness. But when it came to this, I got to go and get word. I don't know if they're going to do this. He didn't directly say no, though, but Black History Month came up, and it was by a black female. And then he said again, he was like, he said, I don't know. I have to get word on that. I can't tell you a yes or a no. That's exactly how he answered. It was a very programmed, very rehearsed response. And I hadn't heard anything else from that. My next one is, Gus, I sent you a image that a white woman gave me from the newspaper, because she usually gives me either these articles or these images from the newspaper, the local newspaper articles. And I believe it's a cartoon of two people or three people in the Starbucks. And it looks like it's a black male asking, the barista is asking, what can I get you? And then the black male was like, well, I'll get what he's having. And it's a giant coffee cup that says white privilege on it. So I don't know where it came from, but I said it was an interesting image. I don't know, maybe it was from some kind of comic or something. My next one is, there was two incidents that I noticed with this white woman, and she was real sick this week, and she kept going home with a cold or whatever. And I'm bringing her up because the first one is she got a black male customer, and he was coming in to get information on his court case. And I don't know if it was something about payments or some kind of information he needs to have to file another document to go in his case. And the white woman, she says, oh, you know, child support, that's child support is across the hallway. If you want to get, he's like, hold on, huh? Yeah, child support payments, you have to obtain that across the hall. He's like, no, I'm here on something else. Like, I'm not here about no child support. Why would you say that? He asked her a question. He's like, oh, you know, I'm sorry. Most of the time when I'm asked about payments, I'm thinking that it's child support payments. They do it monthly. So she apologized, I guess, halfway, whatever. So the black female, she didn't say anything, but I know she heard it. And, you know, they was talking about it with each other, her and the black female supervisor. But they wouldn't say it was an act of racism. You know, I can tell the confusion is there once again. So same white woman says that she was going to take a 15-minute break. And this is my next one. She's going to take a 15-minute break. And it's going to take a little over 15 minutes because I'm going to have to get some cough drops and something else that I'm going to need for my code. So the older black female was like, oh, you know, maybe you should get some tea with lemon or tea with honey or something to help soothe your throat. And I know, see, this goes to Gus's, the phrase, don't help whites. I think I don't help white people. So she responds like, no, you know, I'm kind of dehydrated right now, so I'm just going to chug down some Powerade. And, you know, I don't need any of that. So I guess her feelings was hurt. I guess, you know, going on feelings. Because he was like, you know, I was just trying to give her advice when she was leaving. So they was all talking about that. And my next one is, there was a conversation that took place actually between this person and a white guy. And I don't think it involved racism directly, but he was asking, you know, well, how's your, you know, I didn't see you in a while. Where were you? And she says, I was at the medieval fair or whatever. So, and it got to some part of the conversation where he was talking like, you know, highly and confidently about himself. And he said something about, you know, yeah, I'm great. And she was like, what do you mean? And he says, oh, well, you know what? When I get up in the morning, I piss excellence. That's exactly what he said. And, you know, he was smiling. They both started laughing about it. So it got to the general level on that one. My next one is on the Friday of the luncheon, like toward the end of the day, my father passed away. And it was on the same day I had luncheon. And I know when I came in that day, I knew they weren't going to participate in high amount. So I didn't go to work all last week because I was trying to help with my family to help, you know, get the situation together and everything. I was dealing with some things. And now when I got back, the warden, she put up a Japanese bonsai plant on the desk, but she didn't come in there when I was sitting in there. So she waited until I left to do it. So I'm like, why would she bring this in here when I'm gone? And, you know, the black female was like, oh, you know what? I think she's just intimidated by you or whatever. So, you know, whatever that even meant. And the people in my department, they generated a card and they put some money in it, like over $50. But a lot of these same people, you know, they didn't even bring anything to participate. But now y'all want to, you know what I mean? Like you want to try to make it seem like you sympathetic for my situation. But yeah, they didn't even have any care or concern about, you know, participating for the lunch. So I just felt like that was very hypocritical. Other than that, my last thing would be, is I had someone went onto the desk that I use. I'm not going to say my desk. I call it the desk because that is true. Like, I have no ownership of it. Like, I printed out the sign-up jeans because it's documentation to show that how many people signed up. Barely even 16, 17 people out of 50. Out of 50, 17 out of 50. Okay, and I printed it out, so somebody threw it away. Okay, but I screenshotted it, and I sent it to my email. I printed it out again, so somebody knew that I was trying to save evidence. And that's all I have right now. Thanks for allowing me to share.
Wow. Context of white supremacy. Save evidence. Racists do not like niggers being smart enough to save evidence. I'm so sorry to hear about the passing of your father. Condolences to you and your family on your loss. I know that can be stressful in a lot of different ways, and racism, white supremacy, most to blame for the passing of your father. But again, condolences to you and your family in dealing with all of that. Let's see, when all of this was about having, hey, we're supposed to be about justice. That's what Dr. King was about, and putting the form together and their lack of enthusiasm. I think you were telling us they were pestering you to participate in the potlucks at the end of the year for the so-called Christmas holiday. This, you know, it's justice. At the courthouse, Nola. It's not my cup of tea, really. The child support comment does not get any better than tacky. And I think that would be one at the genital level as well. That's just, you niggers are reckless with your genitals, and that's all you're good for. It's just cranking out more little niggers to be irresponsible and come down here, and then we got to get all this paperwork for you all being irresponsible. So, yeah, in my opinion, let's see. The pissing excellent, speaking of genital levels, pissing excellent. Incidentally, that's one I have a difficult time. That had been you or black male on the job, like saying that. I mean, Bill Cosby, I'm just saying, say his name once every program. I mean, I don't know. I feel like that would be on the court stand at some point, some years, that on February 8th said he pissed excellence and pointed at his crotch area. I felt uncomfortable. Let's see. The said it was over our head. I said that about the metaphors. It's over our head. He comes in right down to business. What is this supposed to be about? Making sure that justice is being practiced. People aren't being mistreated. What? Is this an open forum? Is this what? I can't even. Are you speaking English right now? What is this supposed to be? Now, all of a sudden, people that got jobs, some of them degrees, I'm sure, they don't just hire anybody to come work at the courthouse. Now, I have no idea what you're talking about. It's over my head. I don't even know what that means. What does that mean exactly? It means we have no interest in practicing justice. If you want to do any sort of nonsense for Black History Month or any other holidays associated with niggers, fine. Fried chicken, anything else, great. Justice? We work at the courthouse and don't know anything about that, man. Let's get back to practicing racism. That's what we are about in the great state of Florida and Virginia, all the rest of them, worldwide, global system of white terrorism. I have to double check to make sure that I see the image. I did not get to see it. I'll double check to make sure that I was able to check it out so that I can confirm. Other folks who dialed in, if you have a hand up, let's see, the caller 0747. If you had commentary, line should be open. Proceed.
Hello, can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes. Greetings, Gus. I just wanted to
talk about an experience I had several years ago, which the events in Virginia and blackface brought home to me. I transferred to another job out of the city and moved my family to a new part of the country. And I knew one of the people at this area in a new job, but I didn't know most of the people. And the 6 months into the job, I had to, there was a retirement party for the person who was who I was replacing, one of the people I was replacing. And another coworker had the idea that he was going to do some sort of comedy routine where he was portraying Don King. I didn't really know these people that well. And, you know, I thought it was curious. You know, these people were highly educated folks who I didn't know very well. And I said, well, I've got to show up to this party. Felt very uncomfortable. So I show up to the party, and he's in blackface, portraying Don King, just a horribly racist portrayal. Kind of an Amos and Andy type of thing. And, you know, my wife was there. I didn't really know these people. I said, well, this is before I really had a better understanding of racism. I said, well, maybe my best thing to do is to not react. Certainly I didn't laugh, and the portrayal didn't go over very well, seemingly. I mean, no one was really laughing, but it was just horrific. So I got up and left the party early, but I didn't make a whole scene about it. But I think the events of the last week or two has really made me think about that episode and how I handled it, or could I have done something differently. I was really new to the situation. I really didn't know these people that well. And my thinking was that I really didn't want to jeopardize the job. I'd already moved my family out here. If I made a big scene about it, it could really affect my future in this position. So, but it's bothered me for many years, thinking about it, how I could have handled it differently or thought about it differently.
Knowing what you know now, how would you have handled that situation if it were to happen to you today, February 8, 2019?
I probably would not have gone to the party at all, or made some excuse.
I do regularly advise not participating in those parties at all. If you are there, I do say record. That would be a great, because I have heard directly from very high executives that, hey, your conduct at these little affairs and parties and things, that can lead to termination. You get out there embarrassing the company, and, you know, the same rules apply, and, you know, yada, yada. I've heard that repeatedly. And not only have I heard that on jobs where I've been employed, I've heard that in general in the workplace. So if I were there and that sort of thing happened, boop, I would have pulled out my recorder. Let it fly, Bob. Let's hear it. Mm-hmm. Don, you got Mike Tyson too? Let's hear it. And just do my recorder.
Absolutely.
That would have been my strategy and not upset at all. Just make sure that my recorder is working well. I got my batteries rolling. Knock yourself out, Bob. Let's hear Don King.
So, but I think part of the challenge I had was that I was so new to the area, position, these people. You know, I hadn't even been there. I'd been there less than a year and was confronted with the situation. So I chose not to react to it overtly, but I left the party early. I didn't stay for the whole affair, but I think with all this blackface type of thing, you know, as I've learned from listening to the cows and some of the readings, this is just part of white culture. This is nothing unusual or unexpected. It was kind of shocking to me at the time, but as I've learned more, I'm not surprised by it anymore.
That is the goal of counter-racism, for us to stop being surprised about white people being racist, no matter how tacky it gets, not being surprised. Go ahead.
And I would emphasize that this was a highly educated person.
Racist?
This was not some buck tussle white person in, you know, Kentucky on welfare with Confederate tattoos. This was probably one of the highest educated white persons in the community.
My man, Governor Coon Man Northam, graduated medical school and is the governor of Virginia. He is not a moron. He is not ignorant. He is not uneducated. Didn't say he's not a racist.
This was a doctor, too.
All areas of people activity. But system of racism, white supremacy, you know, racists are not ignorant. I would just say for this aspect, especially these type of incidents that are very traumatic for us. And, you know, we might feel like, oh, man, I wish, you know, I hadn't gone to that to begin with, or I wish I had said something. You know, I wish I had done something. I think a lot of times we can be very judgmental of ourselves. And I think it's really important with those type of incidents to remember that we're the victim. You know, you're being mistreated in that instance. That's number one. And racists, they give lots of opportunities for us to practice. So if ever we are not pleased with how we responded in a situation, that's never a reason to beat up on ourselves, as they say, or to judge ourselves harshly. Just, oh, well, next time this sort of thing happens, I know exactly what I want to do. I went through it this time and I wished I had done this, or I wished I had said that. This is going to happen again. When this comes around next time, bam, I already got my code in place. I know exactly what my move is going to be. And they'll, you know, they will not disappoint. Racists, they do what they do, especially with the blackface. I mean, you can set your watch by all of that. Much obliged for the commentary. Did other folks comments on what was shared? Any other folks have a blackface experience on their job that they wanted to share?
Can I be heard?
Retired firefighter.
Yes, I would just like to comment on the last caller's report. I probably would have had the same action to, you know, not get overly excited or anything like that. you know, at all. I may have recorded it. That'd be a good thing to have, you know, to have that recorded. That, you know, it may be something, more than likely it will be something that would be relevant enough for you to reproduce what you saw and is on your phone because you recorded it. I would say the minstrel show activity out of white people may have changed over a century or so, but they still enjoy it. They still enjoy that type of activity for various reasons, I think. I would say psychologically, white people resent the idea that they're not non-white. And also, from the standpoint, they would want to put on those uniforms to make fun of us at the same time. To try to prevent comedy at our expense, I would say, I'll put it that way. And it crosses all lines. It crosses economic as well as quote unquote educational lines on the white people who enjoy it. And I'm sure it was on the fire department, although I don't recall experiencing it directly. I don't think I did, but the closest, it was funny because the closest I came to experiencing something like that, it was actually a black male who was going into a battalion meeting, what they call battalion meetings, where the units of a particular area come together at one station and make reports and whatnot, or we may have a drill, or the chief may have some sort of announcement. And that normally happens at least once a month. And it actually was a black male who showed up with a gorilla mask. I think I mentioned it a long time ago on the program before. And I saw him as he was in the parking lot with this mask. And I approached him and kindly asked him, I forgot what his name was, but I said his name, would you please don't go in there with that mask, because they are going to be on you, and I would be tempted to say something in defense of you. So could you please not take the mask in the meeting? And he thought about it for about 10 seconds and decided to put it up. But I'm pretty sure it happens on the fire department a lot, because on that particular job, there's a lot of time for that. And the very type of white people that the last caller was describing that was, quote unquote, not as educated, that's what I worked with. I worked on the same job with a lot of people who fit that, white people who fit that description. So that's my report on that. Thank you.
Not surprised at all. I am certain that sort of thing is widespread and happening right now with lots of whites on the job, those type of performances. I was even reminded of Dr. Kenneth O'Reilly. He's been a guest on the program more than once. The second time he was a guest on the program, we discussed Nixon's Piano. That's one of his books. He talks about the history of all of the U.S. presidents practicing white supremacy. His book was published before Obama. And he talked, the reason that it's called Nixon's Piano is because for years they would have a performance, like a minstrel performance, in Washington, D.C. I forget the name of the club, but the president and congressmen, senators, folks like the governor of Virginia would go hang out and they would watch whites do this minstrel show. That's how
the chapter starts. That, again, that's why Dr. O'Reilly has the book titled Nixon's Piano. I think you can just listen to the first 5 minutes of the program, and he explains the title of the book, The Minstrel Show, and how that relates to white supremacy racism. That probably go a long way to help you understand Governor Coon Man Northam, still in office. Before I get other folks, we had a caller write in, black male. He's called in before on the Connecticut area. He's an educator, and he's talked about taking the standardized test for educators so that they can get all of the credentials. This is like a grad school type course so that you can be fully credentialed to teach full time. You get the salary bump, benefits, all that good stuff as a full time salary teacher. So he's writing in. He says, I'm currently enrolled in an accelerated route to teachers certification. I've called before regarding the Praxis 2 test that I'm required to take and pass in order to gain certification. I'm still having problems passing this test. I recently took the test and have failed it by 7 points. This was my third time taking the test. All of the white students in my class have taken this test and have passed. I am the only one that consistently fails. I have lost at least $800 taking this test. Peer-reviewed academic articles show that the Praxis test requirements have been named as a major barrier to minority teacher recruitment. All studies show that African Americans tend to score among the lowest of all racial groups. ETS, the one agency that conducts all teacher testing, confirms that the largest score gap between minority and majority test takers, the language, seems to mirror the teacher diversity gap that exists in schools that I teach, located in the urban inner city with majority black and brown students. Challenges in passage of entrance exams being named as a major deterrent for many potential teacher candidates. I really would like to pass this test. I have purchased test-taking material to aid me in my attempts to pass, but still continue to fail. I believe that the test is designed to keep minorities out of the teaching profession. Non-white, I discourage use of the term minority in discussing non-white people. I chose the alternate route to certification because it is amongst Connecticut's top teacher preparation programs. It is unfortunate that I am just now arriving at the conclusion that I will be teaching in a white suburban school setting system. This is something I do not want to do, and also something that I did not originally intend. My original intention was to teach in the urban inner city setting, where the need for black male educators is the greatest. Through this program, especially after the first guest instructor's presentation this week, it is consistently brought to my attention that the urban inner city settings are expected to be underperforming. In an attempt to address inequality and need as a one-size-fits-all approach is the problem. It is this that leaves the majority of students in the inner city disenfranchised. Some of this is veering a little bit from there. Skipping down a little bit. A day before a methods class, I ran into the only black male teacher I had growing up at the grocery store. He was the only black teacher in my high school and is largely responsible for my attending university. He was also my academic advisor. He has become burnout and decided to give up teaching. The need was far too great and the mental cost too much. Policies have become disjointed. He is now enrolled in law school. Is this my fate? Question. Black boys are the victims of low expectations from school teachers and leaders who are afraid of their behavior, of daring them to teach them. I know because I was one of those young boys growing up. Another problem that I am facing in my community, that word, is the overwhelming amount of students with severe disabilities put in the classes. They used to have special classes set up for these students. Now, because of funding issues, they are packing them into the classroom under the guise of equality. Instead of teaching to be the best students, I have to differentiate my lesson plans to teach the middle of the class. Lesson plans don't get accomplished. School funding depends on test scores, and with all the disabilities in the classrooms, schools don't get properly funded. Let's see. Wow, it's kind of difficult to distill it down. I guess the testing portion of it, that would be, I think, priority one. It seems to me from reading this in terms of passing the exam, if the time and energy, and I'm sure it's limited, like you can't just keep taking the exam forever. If you said you failed by 7 points, I would think that that's getting close. It would seem. I don't understand. I don't understand how this exam is scored. So maybe that's not, but I would think that seems like you are getting close. I know some people suggested before, if you could meet with other non-white teachers who have passed the exam to get information from them. I think this individual said before that there are a very limited number of non-white teachers, which may make that impossible. It sounds like this person has already been doing the studying and getting the test prep guides and all of that, all the reasonable things that, students are expected to do to adequately prepare for this exam. It seems like this person is engaged in those behaviors. I think some of the other suggestions folks has was going to professors to see if they can help. If you're that close, to identify maybe where some of the deficiencies are or what you can do to improve your chances so you can make up those 7 points to go ahead and pass the exam. If we have any of our educators, folks who have some experience with test taking and these exams. I know Dr. Umar talked about how that's one of the ways that they practice white supremacy with those types of exams where there's some discretion about what the quote-unquote correct answer is, to help explain why so many whites seem to pass that exam so easily and you and other non-white people are struggling. Any folks with any suggestions for our educator who wrote in? The burnout is to be expected. That is by design, not just for Black educators, but really Black people in any position, to just have them stressed and constantly worried about something. Their performance is just not up to par, and maybe they're going to be fired or whatever. That is a part of white supremacy racism, so that Black people don't get to feel that sense of comfort, groundedness. I'm on a job and I'm going to be here, and I'm not worried about being fired or let go if I, am 30 seconds late, sometime in the next month. Let's see. No suggestions. I don't know if we have our educators with any suggestions for our teacher, Black male educator, struggling with the exam. I know we do have educators who listen to the program. If you are listening to the archive or if you want to email suggestions, we can read them on the air. UntilJustice@gmail.com. UntilJustice@gmail.com, and I can either read your commentary on the air or forward your comments along. But if we have any folks with suggestions for our Black male educator, that would be obliged. Any of the folks who dialed in, if you have thoughts, suggestions, comments on what's been shared thus far, or if you have your own situation, proceed.
Gus, this is not the same person that a few weeks back was asking for help, is it?
Oh, yes, sir. The very same one. He.
Okay.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
So it's something new?
Well, it's just
an update. Something new, or
it's just an update.
Oh, okay.
When he called in before, he was talking about the problem with passing this praxis exam, as it's called, and how this seems to be a widespread problem for Black people taking the test, and was trying to get some suggestions there. And so this email, that still seems to be the case, where he's not yet successfully passed the exam and, still having to deal with that problem.
Okay. I remember myself commenting on it. I forgot exactly what I said as far as a suggestion to it. But maybe if he could find some other Black employees, I'm pretty sure some would have similar analysis of what's going on, and they can, you know, study together or something, you know. That normally improves one's chances when people with the same or similar problem kind of like get together and share what I know. It may help what you don't know, and vice versa, that type of thing. I can recall with Mr. Clark's fire college class, you know, they basically practiced that. Their particular class had a higher percentage of non-white black people in it. And in turn, that's what they did. They kind of like studied with each other. There were a few people. There was one black male that didn't do it. And he said it for some reason, and in turn, he didn't make it. He got fired, you know, because he failed too many tests, yeah, that sort of thing. But that's one tested antidote that has had some success.
Right on. Appreciate that. Retired firefighter. I think this black male in Connecticut, I think he was saying that unfortunately this is a super white program. So he might be the only black male in the program, might even be the only black person, period. But there are not a lot of other victims that he can track down and study with and swap resources. He was saying that was part of the program, I think, a sense of isolation in the program and not really being able to reach out to get help from the other. There's not really anyone there to reach out to help for.
I would say if it's one or even two, but it sounds like you're saying that it's not even one.
Yes.
You know, it wouldn't be in harm in asking if it is one. But other than that, I forgot to include in my report. There was just recently a report on the non-white black male school superintendent, Broward County Public Schools. And this is not me. This is the NAACP, I would guess the black portion of the NAACP, and I'm quoting the news. They basically stated that they are warning the governor of the state of Florida not to fire Mr. Runcie for political and or racist, quote unquote, reasons. I think the governor's comment was that he is not immediately in a position of to fire him, but he does understand that there are ways to do it. Do you hear that?
Sorry about that.
Okay. But anyway, that what would take place to fire him would be to put pressure on the school board membership. I forgot what those positions are, the people that sit abreast to him in the meetings, because they are elected officials. Mr. Runcie, I believe, was appointed. I could be wrong about that, but those school board members are elected positions, and pressure could be on them to basically state that they want to, the staff itself want to go in another direction as far as who's the superintendent. So that's how that can take place. I mean, you know, the white people have many different means of getting to do what they want to get done. They place that in their code of practicing racism and white supremacy on a small as well as a large basis. And that's my additional report.
Absolutely. Having the ability to get things done, that is power. Having the ability to get things done, white power, right there. Before I nab some of the other folks who dialed in, just with the listener in Connecticut, the black male educator, it might be, this is just a suggestion, I don't know if it'll make any traction, a lot of times for these exams, they will have sometimes ritzy, sometimes kind of pricey practice sessions, programs that are taught. Sometimes they are local, where you can pay a certain amount of money, and it's, you know, I don't know, 2-3 week program, and you go in and train you, and you know, sometimes they'll even promise or guarantee results that, you know, if your test scores don't improve by this much, a certain percentage or what have you, the training is free, or you'll get a discount, or you know, whatever the case. See if there are resources. Talk with your the folks at the school and the program that you're in to see if there is a program where you can help to train for the test. And if there is no program, just based what retired firefighter just said, white people know how to solve problems. I'm sure these folks, if there is no program, see if they can set up some sort of program to help. If you said in the email that your last exam, you missed it, you failed by 7 points. If that's close enough, they should be able to come up with some sort of program to help, that you need extra assistance. We have to ask for help sometimes. Right? The system of white supremacy discourages victims, black people, from asking for constructive help. Hey, is it possible that I could get a program, an individual program set up to help me prepare for the exam? I'm having problems. I've invested a lot of money, a lot of time. I've taken the test repeatedly, and I still haven't passed. You all, with your illustrious staff here in the school, should be able to help me figure out what my deficiencies are so that I can pass this exam and go out and do great work in the quote-unquote community. That's what we're here for, so I can go out and teach. I need some help. Let's figure it out. Now, there might be some resistance, but I would keep asking, because there should be some folks there who are able to figure this out and help. 7 points is not, I mean, it'd be totally different if you were failing by 50 points, but I mean, 7 points. Oh, yeah. White people should be able to help something. That's a few questions. I mean, that's close enough. We should be able to help get that over the hump. Let's see. Irie, I don't think we've heard from you at all. If you had commentary you wanted to share, ma'am, line should be open. Proceed.
Good evening, everybody. Good evening, Gus. And this is a suggestion. I could be there could be some modification necessary for this suggestion. But I'm thinking logically, if he's taken this test in Connecticut, his last-ditch effort may be to actually become a certified teacher in an adjacent state. And the reason I'm saying that is because he's done it 3 times already. It hasn't worked. You know, I'm not saying he won't pass, but what's the probability that he will after 3 times if not? So it may be easier for him to get certified in another state and then carry those credentials over back to Connecticut. I'm not a permanent teacher. No, I am not. I am a certified substitute teacher. But I know individuals that were certified teachers in other states. They moved, whatever, and then it was just, you know, basically an issue of, okay, your degree, your certificate, you know, whatever other referrals or references they needed, and then they were teaching. It may take a little bit longer as well, but we just, you know, I don't want him to spin himself out taking this test over and over and over again, where, you know, we can't expect a different result from the same type of activity. The other suggestion I was going to make before he gets to that point is maybe even evaluate, hey, you know what, I'm taking this exam in the same examination center, and I failed 3 times. Is there another examination center I can take this at? who knows, maybe the change in the atmosphere there, the lighting might make a difference. I don't know. I just know something has to be a drastic change in either his testing condition, in my opinion, or he's going to have to try to get certified in another state and move back over. And I'll mute my line. And I hope that's constructive. I really do. I'll mute my line. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Irie. That is interesting. I hadn't thought about that either. If it's a different testing center or something of that nature, and then also about being certified in a different state, trying it that way. It's lots to consider. And with those types of programs, racists, they try to milk you for as much as they. A lot of times with those exams are not free. That's right. By design, too. So they, we want you to take it 3-4 every time. Oh, yeah. Give us another $300 time and energy. Oh, yeah. That's another $300. Just try it one more time. We'll get you this. Give us one more time. Oh, yeah. Got almost $1,000 on that one. So, I mean, they got endless rackets in the system of racism, white supremacy. So before we get our other caller, email again, untiljustice@gmail.com. untiljustice@gmail.com. Other person wrote in to share, black female. My daughter was near the office I work at. I didn't want her to come into where I work because of the racists, but it was an emergency. I introduced her to the team out of courtesy. After she left, one race soldier told me that she was jealous of me. I laughed because it seemed odd to me. She then said, "I'm serious. I'm jealous." I did not take this as a compliment. She has terrorized me indirectly through team managers for years. Her response should not have been a surprise, as her contempt has been obvious for years. This morning, I was standing by the desk. I was allocated getting something out of my bag. The race soldier was walking by, eyeing me from head to toe. I had my back to her and was facing the window. She did not realize I could see her in the reflection on the glass. She and another race soldier regularly come into the office dressed in replica outfits that I have worn. I do not see this as a compliment, and I am fascinated by the pathological behavior. I agree with the codification discussed on the cows about not dressing in a way that draws attention, with the caveat that a race soldier with insecurities will have an issue regardless of what you wear. A few years ago, because of this behavior, coupled with the mistreatment I experienced in the team, I tried to come up with ways to address the contempt I encountered in the main from race soldier females. This caused me to expend excessive amounts of time trying to dress in a way that would not draw attention to myself. I had to stop after a few months, because it was causing me undue stress and because I realized it would not make a difference. Whites are going to be white. Very important one to remember. Sometimes the simplest ways of articulating it. Birds chirp, dogs bark, white people practice racism, and we absolutely can, and many of us do, run ourselves ragged, thinking if we do this, they'll do right by us, or if we do this, maybe they'll leave us alone, or if we do this, and it really doesn't matter. The wardrobe thing, I am a big advocate of simplifying and not wearing things that call a lot of attention, but absolutely, as she said, and that's so bizarre. I mean, it's delectable Negro, in my view, black person, not white person, period, but talking about black people, wear something and you see it and then you go and copy them. I'm going to get, try as best I can to match up an outfit exactly like what they wore. And then I'm going to wear that to work too. I mean, wow. Dr. Welsing, talked about that, and the envy, motivating individuals, melanin deficient beings, motivating their pathology. But I mean, yeah, that's definitely not anything that I take as a compliment, and take whites at their word. I'm jealous of you. I'm going to take you at your word, that's how you're functioning. I wouldn't even let on that that's not even the correct use of the word, that I think the word you mean is envious, but whatever. And I mean, be mindful of that, because I think I've heard that from a number of Black people in workplace settings. Whites being jealous of the, for whatever reason, the type of vehicle you have or perception that you have more education or are more attractive than they are. And they just become vindictive, even more vindictive and hostile than they would be under normal circumstances. So be very, very mindful of that sort of dynamic. And certainly anytime you have to bring your children, even under emergencies, having to bring your children around them, like, woof, that is always a rough one. You can debrief the children later, but I can understand anyone's trepidation about having to have your children exposed to these race soldiers and just all of that. Ugh, my sympathies on that one. Other folks, dialed in, if you have suggestions for anything that has been shared on the broadcast, or if you have your own situation that you would like to share, line should be open.
The last report, the writer was stating that she identified her child out of courtesy. I would say, you know, VGQ, but with me, it would have had to be some official reason on why that white coworker would be asking me on who was I addressing. It would have to be some kind of official reasoning on why that was necessary to do so. And I would just keep it like that. Because that's the only thing that I heard that would actually reduce the level of discontentment that white people have for us on these jobs. It will reduce it if they know the least about me, other than what is officially necessary and or important. I am grateful that I was on a job, a profession that basically everybody had the same quote unquote uniform. Although I did alter mine when they started, after 9/11, they started putting a flag on the uniform. And I was actually going right to the cleaners and having it taken off. And I actually went on for years. It went on for years. But it just goes to show you, and I can definitely confirm the fact that white people do pay attention to their niggers. And eventually they sent me a memo stating the fact that they noticed that my uniform did not have it on it. So I had to stop that particular practice. But then I think probably about the last maybe 1 or 2 years that I was before I retired. But I wouldn't have unless it was I can't think of it being what would be official about that I would have to mention on who I'm talking to as far as my child or whoever. As far as that concerned, as long as I'm following the rules, I put it that way. As long as I'm following the rules, as far as some whoever can come in to see me at a particular time or whatever, if it's an emergency or if it's not an emergency, I wouldn't let that person know on who that is. And if they were bold enough to ask me, then I'd be bold enough to say, I may not say none of your business, but I would say something to the fact. That would end up being none of their business if they were bold enough to come and ask me who that is and that sort of thing. That's it.
Sharing as little information as possible. I love it. I could definitely see a white person getting a major attitude on that one. Like, what?
this nigger is not going to tell me they got another nigger up here to visit, and they're not going to, oh, okay. I for sure see them like, all right, okay.
Or I would have met them downstairs. I would have met them downstairs and, you know, met the person in the parking lot or something. You know, something like that, you know, one or the other. It depends on the atmosphere, because you're right. It may produce some problems, but I would probably have met him in the parking lot or some private place.
Definitely one to consider, because as you said, and as is emphasized regularly, racists, they do not slack on their surveillance. They are watching, and you can better believe if you are a black person and you have a guest to come see you on a job, oh yeah, they are. Everybody is going to be taking notes like, oh, is this a drug harriet? What's going on here? Child support? What's going on? Who's that? What relation are they to you? Was that your parole officer? What's going on? I mean, and they'll be gossiping too. So have that in mind. And just as retired firefighter said, I hadn't thought about that before. But if you're going to have somebody and you're going to have to rendezvous while you're on the job, maybe you can schedule it so you meet them away from the office or meet them at a different point where you can miss some of those surveilling racists. But yeah, I had never even thought about that in a workplace setting, you know, where if you're going to have to meet someone or someone is going to have to meet you on a job. Let's see. Other folks, if you have comments, questions that are with us, proceed. Folks all satisfied and or spectating. Certainly. Oh, Stacy, in the UK, hanging tough, 3:33 a.m. Saturday morning.
Guys, I just wanted to pick up on the caller in Florida who talked about the person being asked if they were on their way to pay child support. Years and years and years ago, I was on my way to a job interview, so I was wearing a suit. I wasn't quite sure where I was going, so I asked for directions. A race soldier who I believe was the teacher, because he was with a class full of children, probably around the age of 10. So I asked him directions, and the first thing he asked me was, are you looking for the court? I said no and just walked off. So we regularly either get accused of being some sort of unworthy citizen, criminal, etc. I'm in my langas.
Potential looter, rapist, mugger, all of the above. Absolutely not employed citizen doing lawful business. Absolutely not. anywhere in the world, absolutely not. That could not be what is taking place at all. Which sort of thing drains you as well, even when you are a black entrepreneur or whatever it is, constantly being thought of as a criminal, being thought of and treated as a criminal, looter, suspected rapist, that does tend to take a toll on your mental health, physical health, spiritual well-being. Not being thought of as an entrepreneur, you're just a criminal, nigra. Number again, 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound, *61 if you have a thought, question you want to get in last few minutes before the broadcast wraps up. Again, I would really speak up about just be mindful the comments in the workplace, even if it is something that's, you know, there's nothing overtly, you know, nasty, heinous about what's been said. Oh, that's a nice jacket. If that's coming from a white person, I would be real mindful. If they're white, even, I mean, just that alone lets you know that they are watching you. We are paying attention. I would be mindful about whatever else has happened with that white person, just even if they do say something nice without anything snarky added, don't be thinking, oh, this is, you know, my white friend on the job. They're all right. You know, they think I dress snazzy, or, you know, they like my briefcase or whatever it is. Like, no, this is a race soldier who has just let you know that they are watching and keeping very close tabs on you. Let's see. Oh, and sometimes certainly it can be. I know some, just pondering, I know sometimes, particularly I think for parents, there can be some situations where it's just unavoidable, especially depending on the age of the child, where there just got to be, for whatever reason, an emergency around in a workplace environment. And yeah, you just try to do the best that you can in those circumstances and be prepared, racists. They are definitely going to be all in your business on those days, and, you know, looking for this, that, and the other. I would be prepared as much as you want to share or not share, but just know that going in, that's generally the way that they operate. Other thoughts, comments? Anybody, did the Virginia thing pop up? I don't know if we have people that are here specifically in the Virginia area, but with the whole governor and the blackface, did that pop up on the job for anybody over the past, it's been a week since all that happened, or people been quiet about that?
May I be heard?
Yes, sir. Caller in Florida.
Yes, sir. It came up briefly. The same white woman that looks at the newspaper articles, I noticed that she, I was getting some water. I was putting some water in a bottle, and she brought up the situation in Virginia, and she said it was something. I think it was about the black male. I think Mr. Fairfax or something. And she said it was another person that admitted they practiced blackface, and we had a conversation about it in the break room a few months ago when the Megyn Kelly story was on the news about blackface and how, and this person is 72 years old. So she was saying, says, oh my goodness, it was so common back then. And, but see, she ain't say it was racist though. You see, because, you know, white people, they grew up in the white enclaves and neighborhoods and environments. But then when they're challenged by a non-white person, they're like, oh my goodness, really? I didn't know you were offended by this, or quote unquote offended. Okay. And then, you know, some of them tend to notice the racism in it, I guess, in this day and age, 2019, but this is all historically connected to this. So she, you know, she was bringing it up to me about it. And she said, you know, if everybody could just be treated equally, I was like, hey, that's what I was just saying in the committee just last month about justice and people being treated correctly. And I could tell people was looking really nervous around, because we was just walking out of the break room talking about that. So it did come up briefly, but not too much other than that, though. But yeah, that's all I have.
Noted that as well. Oh yeah, blackface. We all used to dress up like Curtis Blow and Michael Jackson and Al Sharpton. I used to dress up like Jesse Jackson myself. They'll say that was common. They won't say, oh yeah, that was real racist. It was common and racist. That's put it all together, but they don't, you know, they don't do any of that. And the beautiful coming right back. All of this is always going back to justice. Always. That is an easy one where you can always find ways of walking the conversation back to justice and people being treated correctly. No one should be, especially in a court situation, no one should be upset or offended about that. Hey, that's what I was talking about before. We need to get the justice. Oh, God. Is the break done? We can go back to work. Thank God. I got to hear about this nonsense. I didn't come to the courthouse for this. I came down here to practice racism and clown on people coming down here and act like they all came for child support payments. Let's see. The person who dialed in last four digits. Oh, why is it not doing that? 2215. 2215. Last four digits, 2215. You should be with us.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Greetings, guests. Greetings to everyone. Just wanted to talk of a few scenarios at work. One was just recently where I mentioned this a few weeks back about one of the coworkers talking about, they were talking about guns on the job there. And so this particular person, he works at a gun store. And so every now and then he'll just kind of yell over the cubicle, you know, want to buy a gun, want to buy a gun, got a gun for sale. So he did that again this week, you know, just making people aware that he's got guns for sale. And then one of the other co-workers came up to him. I heard him talking, asking, hey, so what's the lowest price gun that you have? And he mentioned, you know, he's got one for, you know, $180 or something like that. And it's a 9mm, and he describes all the different things, features about the gun. But I, you know, he never goes up to certain, you know, never comes up to me ever and asks if I ever want to buy a gun, but always, and I'm the only black in that area, black person in that area, but there's others that will come up to him and discuss, and he'll kind of talk over the cubicle about guns. But again, just never approaching me, or, and I never really seen him really go up to any other person to offer or solicit, you know, to purchase a gun, but they will come to him, you know. But I just found that to be, doesn't really tie into workplace racism. It just makes me very suspicious and aware that white people, many white people are gun toting or desire to have guns. And it just makes me think so much of whenever there are situations that may be like a Katrina or, you know, area where people are gun toting, they're so easy to hunt black people, right? So I just kind of keep that in mind of gun-toting white people that many times also will gather and start drinking. Those are just environments that I just don't desire to be around whenever they start to go for the company picnics and things where they start drinking and all. Say my hi and goodbyes and show my face and have a hamburger or something, and that's it, I'm out, you know. Also wanted to kind of talk about another situation where I'm going back some years, and it's like, you know, it's like I've heard you say more than once, Gus, where, you know, we're learning, right? And so going back years when you were less informed, where it was a white lady that we became friendly, not in any type of personal or sexual way, just cordial. She worked next to me, near me, so we would have a lot of conversations about different things. But at one point, she made mention of relationships, and she made mention of her relationship before with a black person, both a black man, and on had been involved sexually with a black man. But she was dating one of the other co-workers who was a white man, and she actually ended up, you know, getting engaged and marrying him. But at the time of, yeah, right. So in the time that they were engaged, you know, somehow we got on the conversation about that again, and she wanted to be very, very clear that I never mentioned to him that she had been with a black guy before. And, you know, I never really thought too much about it until, you know, a few months ago. And again, this happened years ago. These conversations were years ago. But now, just recently, like a few months back, I go back and I'm thinking, I'm like, wow, why was she so adamant about, you know, not mentioning it to him at all? You know, please, please, you know, begging, please don't mention it to him at all that I've ever been with a, you know, black person. So, you know, after a while, you just kind of put two and two together. It's like, I wonder if he says a lot of things, you know, away from work about black people, you know, in a negative way. You know, I don't know. I never heard him say anything. I never saw him do anything. Never said anything in a racist way. Never behaved in any racist manner. But it just makes me think that, for her to be so adamant about that, I don't know. Another scenario where, you know, last week you played the clip about the people that would go to work and would kind of put on a mask and kind of pretend and kind of do what they had to do to get through the workday, being phony, so to speak. And, you know, it was leading, I guess the clip and all that and the discussion, I didn't really listen to every detail of that whole session there, but it made me think of when it was playing, it just made me think of white people being phony at work to kind of tolerate and just put up with black people. And at the same time, you know, when they go back home or go away from blacks, then they're, you know, they would say or do things about black people, talk about black people in a negative way, do the blackface pictures, whatever it may be, right? And so it made me think of also of a person that I know that works as a teacher helper at a school. And so the person I know is black, but the teacher actually is white. And so the person, you know, shared me a lot of things about this white teacher, where they grew up in a racist home. Father was a racist. She married a racist. I actually, you know, met them and met the man that she married, and he never came across to me in any way, shape, or form as a racist. And never said anything, never treated me or anyone that I knew or that we knew of in that environment in any negative way. But that person, the friend that I know, who's the teacher helper, would share a lot of things that this teacher would say about some of the racist things that her husband says, some of the racist things that her father has said in the house that she grew up, and she would always say, well, you know, I'm not that way, you know, I'm not a racist, and she would say things to the, you know, the teacher helper, because they became somewhat close and being able to talk openly about different things. And the teacher would literally say things like, well, I can tell you because, you know, we have that type of relationship. And then she would say something about black people, something negative about black people, or something negative that her husband said. One of the things that her husband said, something about Michelle Obama, you know, looking like Chewbacca. And that was just recently, within the last, you know, couple of months back or so. But again, if you talk to them or be around, you would never think that. You would never know that. They put on such a facade, but yet when they're not around black people, like Dr. Welsing would say, what do white people talk about when black people aren't around? And so this teacher would say things and tell a friend of mine things that they say, things that they have talked about. One other thing, and then I'll quit, but she said something about she and her husband had seen this other black family, and I forget if it was a biracial couple or so. Anyway, they had kids, and she made mention of how the kids' hair was like Brillo pads, you know. And of course, she would say, well, you know, I can say it to you because, you know, we're friends. You know, she's telling, you know, the friend of mine that works as a teacher helper, I can say it to you because we're friends. Gee, those kids, their hair looks like Brillo pads, you know. So, again, it just made me think about that clip again where people put on the facade and they have to pretend, you know, that they enjoy their work and all, and makes me think that there's, you know, the phoniness that a lot of white people have in the work center where they pretend to be your friend, pretend to be, you know, get along with you, but yet, you know, at home they're saying all these negative things, all these racist things about black people. One last thing, and this is, I mentioned this before a while back as well when I called in one time, where the person that hired me, I actually went to school with his son, and his son never said or did anything in a racist way as we were kids in high school and all, but just one day as I was sitting in my cubicle there amongst all the other coworkers, the one that hired me was kind of walking the area and office area, talking amongst other coworkers. And he said something loud and clear, you know, as he was talking about working in the yard, he said he was sweating like a nigger. And, you know, I just kind of sat there, like, oh my God, did he really just say that? Wow. You know, and I kind of like stood up slowly and kind of looked up, and no one checked him. No one said anything to him about it. Now, I'm going back about a good 20 years ago that this happened. I'm not sure if today, you know, maybe they would, maybe people would kind of check a person, but, you know, going back years, you didn't see that. You didn't hear people, you know, making any issues with white people saying things that were out of line. You know, I just kind of wonder if that would happen today. You know, so it made me think of, here he is amongst his other coworkers, comrades, and again, not thinking that I'm around, can't see me, and here he says something, talking about sweating like a nigger. And seemingly, and it just rolled off his tongue so easily that, again, it sounds like, or it came across as if that's just common way of talking amongst his peers. You know, nothing strange, nothing unusual. That's the way they normally talk. You know, I just wanted to share those things. That was it. Thank you for letting me share.
For sure. And it is. That is how they normally talk. That's why it's been so many people, because it started with Coon Man Governor Ralph Northam in Virginia. It started with him. And then it was the Virginia Attorney General who said, well, man, if we're going to get him in trouble, I dressed up in blackface too. And then it just kept going on down the line. And then another white person stepped up and said, well, I edited the yearbook and I had a photo selected in the yearbook where it was a whole bunch of whites, my classmates, Bob and Roger, they were in blackface too. And I think probably said nigger about 20 times, had a few nigger jokes in there too. I mean, it is that's what it means to be white. Practice racism. This is what they sound like when Dr. Welsing says, what do white people sound like when it's no niggers around? We are just confused about that. That's why it just rolled off his tongue, got me in here sweating like a nigger. You know, sometimes they would just talk that way. I did want to make sure that I included as well, for one, when you were talking about the white male who was being so cavalier with guns for sale in between whatever you all do on the job. He's answering the phone, I guess, or making a report, and then guns for sale. Got Glocks, 9mm, whatever you need, gun for sale. I'll take that back. This is a system of white supremacy. Violence is demanded, necessary, absolutely necessary, indispensable. That being said, in this environment, I would think that you're increasingly going to have work environments that are not tolerant of that sort of behavior, at least not in an overt manner like that, and may even have explicit rules and policy and procedure against that sort of behavior. I know in some work environments that might even be considered, you know, violent, offensive, like you cannot be here promoting the sale of firearms, that is just not going to be tolerated. And I don't know your work environment, but I mean, if I was a victim, that might be something that I would question. I mean, Parkland, this is the 1 year anniversary of the Parkland shooting that they're talking about. We just had the 1 year anniversary of the Vegas shooting. Really? That's what I mean. Is that even what we're here to do on company time, to sell firearms? What kind of business is this? Where are we again? Is this Smith & Wesson? What's going on? To ask in this sort of environment, is that when people are coming up to, hey, yeah, you got any 9mm? What are you working with here? What is going on? System of racism, white supremacy. That's what's going on. In addition, I think you were talking about the white woman, and she was saying that she commented that she had some sort of sexual history with niggers, or a nigger at least, and to not say anything to the white man that she was with. I think I've said before, I would make a concerted effort. I am not on the job to talk about all of white women's whorish activities or white men's horse activities, or really anybody's bedroom activity. We've had some other people who talked about that, where whites, they want to talk about their slutty escapades with the Negras on it. Not here for that either. I'm not here to buy firearms, and I'm not here to talk about your, or to hear about your sex life. I would make it quickly and explicitly clear that is not acceptable for the workplace. What do they say? NSFW? There you go. And then continuing with that, that, at least in my mind, makes it abundantly clear that her husband does not like Negros. The fact that she has to emphasize that, it's not a, I mean, it's not assumed that she's a virgin. It's assumed that she's probably dated a white man before. And there's not some sort of vendetta, like, don't let my husband or partner or whatever he was know that I've dated someone before. It was only the Negros that we cannot allow him to know that I have crept in bed. I think they even have a term for that. It's a coal diver, something with the term coal. They have defiled their whiteness with a Negra. But I would not engage in those conversations. And then I would say, you already have your confirmation that her husband is a racist by her having to make a comment like that. Why would that have to be something that you have to hide as though it's shameful? He has probably let her know in no uncertain terms, let her know unambiguously how he feels about the man, not the black male. I'll stop there. Actually, we will stop there. That is 3 hours. We did our full broadcast. Someone emailed me while we were live on the program about the Cows Yoga Retreat. We are sold out. There are no spots left. If you would like a homework assignment, if the retreat happens, or it's going to happen, if we're able to conclude the event and there has been no bloodshed, no name calling, I do not get run out of the state of Virginia with axes and pitchforks. Perhaps, you know, we will, like, way down the road, look at doing this again. It is difficult to find locations that are black owned where we could have a retreat. So if there are victims of racism who are in a different location, preferably if I had my druthers, since we have representatives here, Florida or California, those would be my spots. If we could find a black owned location in those areas that could host 15 to 20 people, where we could all reasonably have a room, a bedroom, or at least two people per room. And there would be room where we could eat and do yoga, 15 to 20 people. If you could find a spot, maybe we can look at having a retreat again. Later on, there were people who were Virginians, pretty like myself, or Virginia's very far from them, who said that's just not doable. Perhaps you could have a retreat for people on the West Coast who can't get all the way out to Virginia. West Coast is way easier for me if we can find a location. Again, Florida is very far from me, but it's warm weather, so I would definitely be down. We've had a lot of great supporters in the Florida area. If you can find a location, black owned, could host 15 to 20 people reasonably, plant-based diet, and we could do our yoga and the whole nine. Perhaps we could do another retreat if people are so interested. That could be a homework project to see if you can find a black-owned business that would be willing to host us. In the meantime, Virginia, February 21 to February 24, the Cows 10-year anniversary yoga retreat. 2 weeks, we should be in VA. In the meantime, we should be here tomorrow, compensatory call-in. We will catch up on what's gone down in the state of Virginia. Occupied a lot of news time this week and other news items. We should also be here on Sunday. Speaking of Virginia, just the timing is not a coincidence. Headed to Virginia for the yoga retreat and all of this to do about the state of Virginia. Sunday, Brian Grogan, a suspected race soldier, white male. He was on the program in 2012. We talked about how Prince Edward County in the state of Virginia closed their schools for 5 years because they didn't want Negros in school with white children. Mr. Grogan did a lot of research on this period in Virginia and is working to do a documentary film
on the project. I thought he would be a great person to have on to put the context of white terrorism in the state of Virginia, to look at it historically, and to re-examine all this to-do about the governor and the attorney general and lots of other whites in the state who have a history of dressing up like Negroes, even though they don't want them to go to school. They don't want to go to school with them, but they love listening to Curtis Blow while they are at school and Michael Jackson. That should be Sunday, normal time, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. If you have questions, comments, workplace racism related or otherwise, untiljustice@gmail.com. With that, thanks all for tuning in. I hope it was worthy of your Friday evening, or for some, Saturday morning. Sobriety would be best under conditions of white terrorism. Let's preserve our brain computers so that we can think of solutions to the problem, whites. In addition to being sober, let's buckle up each and every time we are in a vehicle, passenger, or driver. Let's do all that we can to minimize contact with race soldiers, badge or no. That said, Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cal signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim,
your
brother.
Problem. A victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
Even my conditioning has been conditioned.